Keep your haikus coming all this week. Write it down and be part of it by calling in 8778-MY-TAKE. And part of what gave us this idea to get economic haikus is a book from Jess Walter. The novel's called The Financial Lives of Poets. It comes out in paperback this month, just in time for the two-year anniversary of the start of the financial meltdown. And Jess Walter is with us. And Jess, I thought it was interesting that the New York Times called you a catastrophist. What's your reaction to that label?
I think I'm drawn to the place where there's the intersection between the things that worry us and scare us and frighten us and make us laugh. And I think great humor often comes out of those intersections and those, a man falling down is always funny. You know, a man falling in a sinkhole is even funnier. So, I think it probably is the nature of what I try to write.
Well, you write about some themes in here, all of which are borderline extremely depressing. I mean, number one, you're talking about the collapse of the newspaper industry. This guy was a journalist at a newspaper before he got the idea to write financial free verse. Clearly, financial free verse did not work out that well. His wife's eBay business, right? And they end up with a garage full of figurines that are worthless.
And she's hunting her old boyfriend on Facebook. Yeah,
he's
having a really bad month.
Dystopian 21st century
it
kind
is,
of a
right,
scene there.
Right.
Yeah,
But right now. So.
You started this book before the financial collapse?
I did. I wanted to write a novel about a guy whose life was coming apart. I think anyone knows what that feels like, to be in that place where you just can't catch a break. And I was working on that, and I had actually been in a 7-Eleven and felt like this is the place to capture, we call them convenience stores, but they're really desperation stores. You know, everyone in there at 2 in the morning does not look happy about it. And then the economy started crumbling around me, and I thought it was a rare opportunity for a novelist to just stick my head out the window and describe what it looks like as the car goes off the road.
And the desperation at 7-Eleven became desperation at Starbucks. Desperation
right, right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so it was for me, a rare opportunity to almost write a novel in real time. And being a journalist, having a journalist background, that really appealed to me.
Although, wait, in a certain way, you kind of envy him because he ends up using his marijuana business to get some pretty sweet revenge on some people that he doesn't like. So in a certain way, you're also kind of playing into all of us and our desire to blame somebody and get back at someone, right? Was that intentional?
Yeah, it was. I knew all along it would be a rant. I mean, I'm outraged that this is the first recession in history in which the income gap has widened. And I think income inequality is a huge problem. I think we have giant structural problems in this economy that that can't be solved in our political climate. And so I knew it would be a rant. The thing that surprised me was that Matt, the main character, would have so much shame that he would feel responsible himself for the mess he'd gotten into. And that's the great joy of writing fiction is you discover as you're going along what your character is and what he thinks.
Now, you are not a poet. You're a fiction writer.
The people who read the book tell me that, yes. my poet friends said a couple things. Yeah. They said, The Financial Lives of the Poets, that's going to be a really short book.
To be fair, you were trying to show that this guy also was not that great of a poet.
Right. It does free you to write poetry that is a little bit banal, that's for sure.
Well, we put this assignment actually before our listeners, and some of them did have some pent-up anger.
Bob from New Jersey, my economic haiku. Our expectations misdirected it. Our greed destroyed it. Let's blame Obama.
And some of them were, much more poignant than that.
Tomorrow, Baltimore. I have no money. I want some. Give me a job. Saving is futile.
Poetry is a search for meaning.
Sure.
In some sense, this is perfectly, it's dead on.
It is. And if you think about a classic haiku, it's wistful. It often focuses on a season. I think it is kind of a nice form because so much has been written and said, and these are just a glancing way to sort of register the sorrow, the expectation, the anger at
take this job. And shove it.
Right.
It's almost as though the limitations, the spareness of poetry, and especially a haiku, makes it more meaningful because there's not a lot of excess stuff. I mean, I want to read this one to you from Carrie in Providence, Rhode Island. She says, 2/3 through masters, can't find a job anywhere, pay bills, how, I ask. And these are kind of the same sort of questions that you're kind of, in a way, grappling with in your novel, and you don't really come up with answers to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt Pryor, the character in the book, is someone who is you know, in the end, he's got to find out what we all find out, which is that, you know, the search has very little to do with money and those things, you know, the sort of classic thing, hopefully you learn in a novel. But he, you know, he experiences something we don't want to experience in American life, which is to move backward on the economic ladder. We don't assume that it goes in both directions.
Reading this book, I had the same kind of question I had reading a couple others of your book, which is what's the sequel?
Yeah, you know, my characters sometimes show up briefly. Citizen Vince, which is probably my most popular book, you know, that ends and you don't know what happens to him. Well, there's a brief scene in this book in which they're in a restaurant called the Picnic Basket, which is the restaurant Vince always talked about opening. And so sometimes I like to just give myself little notes like that just to remind myself this is a fictional world you're creating, but these people do keep going beyond the end of the pages. And that is what readers always ask. What happened to the person? And I don't have the heart to tell them, you know, I made that guy up. I don't know. So
somewhere in your mind, though, there is the answer.
Somewhere in my mind, they do coexist. And I don't tend to like sequels because I think most people really, you know, if their lives have more than one novel in them, it might be too rich a life to imagine living. And once you've framed a character, you're kind of ready to move along. But I don't mind, you know, imagining what would happen to them and where they might go.
Did you write a haiku for us on the economy?
I did. I you know, once you start, you can't stop. So
it is kind of addictive.
I wrote several. You can't stop.
Yeah, this was probably my favorite one. Buy my books or else. Here's me in retirement. Like fries with that, sir?
Your poetry friends say they're not really worried about you as a poet.
No, I haven't inspired a lot of fear, no.
It's beautiful.
Although I got to say that you are always very good at combining the tragic with the comic, aren't you?
Thank you. I try. Thank you.
Jess Walter, he's the author of The Financial Lives of the Poets, out in paperback this month. He also wrote Citizen Vince that he mentioned, and The Zero, which was a National Book Award finalist. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And again, we want to keep your haikus coming this week. Send them to send the word take to 69866. Follow it with your haiku. If you need to help remembering that, here's a haiku. 69866, how to text the takeaway. Just start it with take.
It's beautiful.
I'm Celeste Headlee.
Oh, I'm so moved. I'm John Hockenberry. Wow.
That
this is
deep.
The takeaway.
It is deep.
Deep.